The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The state of Washington is overhauling its controlled substance laws. A state Supreme Court decision in 2021 in a case called State v. Blake struck down Washington's laws against drug possession. The legislature moved quickly to put some laws back in place, but the bill they passed is essentially set to expire on July 1st, 2023. So on this week's edition of Century, we look at Washington post-Blake. In this legislative session, four different bills were introduced to replace Washington's controlled substance laws. The one that survived the process so far is Senate Bill 5536, which is sponsored by Washington State Senator June Robinson, Democrat from Redmond. Let's start the show with this. Corey Patton is counsel to the Washington Legislature's House Committee on Community Safety, Justice, and Reentry. Here he is speaking before the committee on March 20th. He gives a brief synopsis of Blake and the legislature's response and explains to the committee Senate Bill 5536.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is Corey Patton, staff to the committee. Engross second substitute Senate Bill 5536 modifies certain drug offenses and infractions and their related criminal and civil penalties, as well as establishing a related pretrial diversion program and specific post-convention sentencing requirements, and it expands substance use outreach, treatment, and recovery services and related behavioral health services, and provides a right to court-appointed counsel under specific circumstances. For background, the Uniform Controlled Substance Act regulates the manufacturing, distribution, and dispensation of drugs, including by prohibiting and penalizing certain conduct related to controlled substances, counterfeit substances, and drug paraphernalia. Related provisions of state law also regulate legend drugs, which is another word for prescription drugs in this context. Prior to 2021, possession of a controlled substance under the UCSA was classified as a Class C felony and was considered a strict liability offense, meaning that there was no mens rea element that had to be proven to convict a person of the offense. Mens rea means state of mind, and it refers to whether or not the person accused of the crime possessed a particular frame of mind when committing the act, such as knowing or intention. In 2021, the Washington Supreme Court heard the case of State v. Blake, which presented a challenge to the constitutionality of that offense. The court held that the strict liability nature of the offense exceeded the state's police power and thereby violated the due process clauses of the state and federal constitutions. Consequently, the court's decision in Blake invalidated the possession of a controlled substance offense as written in statute. Later that year, following the Blake decision, the legislature adopted Engross Senate Bill 5476, which amended the offenses of possession of a controlled sub, possession of a counterfeit sub, possession of a legend drug, and possession of 40 grams or less of cannabis in the following ways. First, the bill added a knowing mens rea element to all four offenses, which previously had all been strict liability offenses. Second, the bill classified possession of a controlled sub and possession of a counterfeit sub as misdemeanors, when they were previously classified as either Class C or B felonies. Possession of a legend drug and possession of 40 grams or less of cannabis were already misdemeanors and remained as such. Third, the bill encouraged prosecutors to divert drug possession cases for assessment, treatment, and other services. And fourth and finally, the bill provided that all of the prior changes would expire on July 1st, 2023, at which point the affected statutes would revert back to their pre-Blake provisions. Engross Senate Bill 5476 also further provided that the first two times a person would otherwise be subject to arrest for drug possession offenses, law enforcement was required to offer the person a referral to assessment and services in lieu of legal system involvement. If agency records reflected that the person had already been referred at least twice to those services, officers were allowed but not required to make additional diversionary efforts. Other provisions of Engross Senate Bill 5476 also address the expansion of substance use disorder outreach, treatment, and recovery support services in a variety of ways, including by establishing the Recovery Navigator Program. Turning now to the bill before you, Engross second substitute Senate Bill 5536. For the purposes of this presentation, I'll be discussing what the bill does in 11 parts. First, the bill modifies the conduct that constitutes certain drug possession offenses and the related penalties for those offenses with two different effective dates. First, effective July 1st, 2023, the bill will reclassify possession of a counterfeit substance to be a gross misdemeanor offense. At this time, the amendatory provisions adopted under Engross Senate Bill 5476 related to possession of a controlled sub, legend drug, and 40 grams or less of cannabis will expire and revert back to their pre-Blake language. Effective July 23rd, 2023, the bill will reclassify possession of a controlled substance to be a gross misdemeanor offense and re-add the knowing mens rea elements back to the offenses of possession of a controlled sub, legend drug, and 40 grams or less of cannabis. Second, the bill repeals the requirement for law enforcement to offer a person at least two referrals to assessment and services in lieu of legal system involvement for certain drug offenses. Instead, law enforcement is simply encouraged to offer such referrals. Third, the bill establishes a pretrial diversion program for defendants charged with applicable drug possession offenses. At arraignment, the court must advise defendants and their counsel of the availability of this program. The court may grant a defendant's motion for pretrial diversion, continue the hearing, and refer the defendant for an evaluation by a designated substance use disorder treatment program, or SUD treatment for short. Several requirements apply to defendants who obtain an evaluation and treatment as a part of diversion. For example, the state must make reasonable resources available to assist the defendant in obtaining the evaluation within 7 days. The evaluation must be provided at no expense if the defendant is indigent or qualifies for public defense services, and the recommended services or treatment must also be provided at no expense, subject to the availability of funds. There's a full list of requirements provided in the bill report. I won't go over all of them in the interest of time. The prosecutor may make a motion to terminate diversion if it appears that the defendant is either not substantially complying with treatment, is convicted of an offense that reflects a propensity for violence, is subsequently charged with another drug possession offense, or is convicted of a felony. However, if the defendant successfully completes diversion, including by having substantial compliance with recommended treatment or services, the court must dismiss the pending charge. Fourth, the bill requires courts of limited jurisdiction to impose specific types of sentences on defendants convicted of applicable drug possession offenses, depending on the particular offense and whether the defendant agrees to submit to an SUD evaluation and comply with the recommended treatment as a condition of their probation. For a conviction for either possession of a controlled sub or counterfeit sub, if the defendant does agree to an evaluation and treatment, the court must sentence the defendant to a term of confinement of up to 364 days, all of which must be suspended for a period not to exceed 2 years. However, if the defendant refuses to submit to an eval and treatment, the court must instead sentence the defendant to a term of imprisonment of no less than 21 days. Meanwhile, for a conviction for possession of a legend drug, if the defendant does agree to an eval and treatment, the court must sentence the defendant to a term of confinement of up to 90 days, which must be suspended for a period not to exceed 1 year. If the defendant refuses evaluation and treatment, the court must impose a conviction of no less than 21 days if the conviction involves a Schedule II substance. Several additional requirements apply to any defendant that agrees to an evaluation and treatment as a condition of their probation in these contexts. Some of those overlap with the requirements that I previously mentioned for the pretrial diversion program, but again, a full list is contained within the bill report that I would direct you to reference. If it appears that the defendant is performing unsatisfactorily in the recommended treatment, the prosecutor or the court may make a motion for a hearing to consider sanctions. For a conviction of possession of a controlled or counterfeit substance, if the court finds by a preponderance standard that the defendant has willingly abandoned or demonstrated a consistent failure to comply with the treatment, the court must sanction the defendant by reinstating a minimum portion of the suspended sentence. For the first such sanction, the court may use its discretion in determining an appropriate amount of time to reinstate. For a second such sanction, the court must reinstate no less than 21 days, and for third or subsequent sanctions, the court must reinstate no less than 45 days. The court may not sanction a defendant for failing to comply with treatment if the court finds that the defendant made reasonable efforts but could not comply due to a lack of available treatment or a lack of funding for treatment. If the defendant completes treatment and files proof of completion, the court must terminate probation and enter an order vacating the defendant's conviction. Fifth, the bill provides that effective January 1st, 2025, the Washington State Patrol must aim to complete the necessary analysis for evidence submitted for suspected drug possession offenses within 45 days of receiving such a request. Sixth, the bill modifies the existing Class 1 civil infraction for giving, selling, or permitting the giving or selling of drug paraphernalia. Specifically, the bill eliminates the current prohibition on giving or permitting the giving of drug paraphernalia from the infraction. It eliminates equipment, products, and materials that are used, intended to be used, or designed for testing or analyzing controlled subs from the definition of drug paraphernalia, and it exempts certain programs and staffs from application of the infraction. Seventh, the bill adds opioid treatment programs, or OTPs, recovery residences, SUD treatment facilities, and harm reduction programs to the list of facilities that are considered essential public facilities that are subject to certain local land use regulations. Counties and cities may only impose reasonable conditional requirements on OTPs that are similarly applied to other essential public facilities. And counties and cities are prohibited from imposing maximum capacities on OTPs. Eighth, the bill establishes a program in the Department of Commerce to fund the construction costs necessary to start up SUD treatment programs in underserved regions of the state. Ninth, the bill requires the healthcare authority to create or expand or work with other specific entities to create and expand several programs and services related to SUD outreach, treatment, and recovery support services, and other behavioral health programs. Specifically, the HCA must make funding available to establish additional certified recovery residences, establish a related voucher program, conduct outreach to underserved rural areas, and develop a related training program for housing providers. Additionally, real and personal property used by a nonprofit organization in maintaining a recovery residence is exempt from taxes levied in calendar years 2024 through 2033 under certain conditions. The HCA must also administer a law enforcement assisted diversion, or LEAD, grant program to launch or scale LEAD diversion programs and activities in a broader range of jurisdictions. The HCA must also develop and implement a data integration platform by June 30th, 2024, to serve as a common database for diversion efforts and a data collection and management tool for practitioners. The HCA must contract with the Washington State Institute for Public Policy, or WISIP, to conduct a study of the long-term effectiveness of the state's Recovery Navigator program, with reports due in 2028, 2033, and 2038. WISIP must collaborate with the HCA and the Substance Use Recovery Services Advisory Committee, or SURSAC, to determine the parameters for those reports. By January 1st, 2025, the HCA must also develop payment structures for health engagement hubs. The purpose and function of a health engagement hub is provided in the bill, and it includes, for example, that such hubs must serve as an all-in-one location where people who use drugs can access a range of medical, harm reduction, treatment, and social services. The HCA must also collaborate with the Department of Health and the Department of Social and Health Services to expand the Washington Recovery Helpline and Recovery Readiness Asset Tool. The HCA must convene a work group to recommend changes to systems, policies, and process related to SUD services, and that work group's recommendations are due to the governor and legislature by December 1st, 2024. The HCA must also establish a grant program for providers of supportive resources designed to provide employment opportunities to persons recovering from SUDs. And by June 30th, 2024, the HCA, in consultation with the Department of Youth and Families, or DCYF, must develop training for parents of children and transitional age youth with SUDs, and the DCYF must make appropriate training and opioid overdose reversal medication available for use by caseworkers or employees that may come into contact with people experiencing overdoses. 10th, the bill provides a right to court-appointed counsel in certain family law proceedings. Specifically, if the court in a parenting plan or child custody proceeding determines that a child's parent, guardian, or custodian is affected by an SUD, mental health disorder, or behavioral health concern, that party may have the right to court-appointed counsel. If appropriate, the council must have an understanding of the Indian Child Welfare Act, and the court may also appoint counsel for the child or a guardian ad litem. 11th, and finally, the bill makes appropriations for the Washington State Patrol and the HCA from the State General Fund and the General Fund's federal account in the total of $54,552,000 over the next biennium. These funds are appropriated for the purposes of facilitating the analysis of evidence in drug possession investigations, expanding efforts to provide opioid use disorder medication in jails, providing support for new and established rehabilitation clubhouses, establishing and expanding 23-hour crisis relief centers, providing ongoing funding for certain community grants related to therapeutic interventions, and providing ongoing grants to LEAD programs. A full breakdown of where those appropriations are going and their corresponding use is contained in the bill report. That completes my remarks. Happy to answer any questions.
That was Corey Patton, counsel to the Washington Legislature's House Committee on Community Safety, Justice, and Reentry, testifying before that committee on March 20th in regard to Senate Bill 5536. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Senate Bill 5536 was approved by the state Senate on March 3rd. The House Community Safety Committee's public hearing was March 20th. The committee amended and approved the measure on March 28th, and then 5536 was referred to the House Appropriations Committee. Now, the public hearing before the Appropriations Committee was on April 1st. Then executive action was taken by the Appropriations Committee on April 4th. The next voice you hear will be that of the House Appropriations Chair, Tim Ormsby.
5536, Representative Macri.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that engrossed second substitute Senate Bill 5536 be reported out of committee without the amendment by the Community Safety, Justice, and Reentry Committee.
It has been moved and seconded that engrossed substitute Senate Bill 5536 be reported out of committee due pass without the amendment from the Community Safety, Justice, and Reentry Committee. There are amendments. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move adoption of the striking amendment.
It's been moved and seconded that the striking amendment H1850.2 be adopted. Discussion. Representative Davis.
Mr. Chair, there are amendments to the striking amendment.
Thank you very much, Madam Counsel. There are amendments to the striking amendment. Representative Sen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Pat 182.
It's been moved and seconded that the amendment patent 182 be adopted. Discussion, Representative Sen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an important amendment to require DCYF employees to carry Narcan. We shrunk it down from the original bill that was for all DCYF employees. Juvenile rehabilitation employees already cover and carry Narcan, but we want to make sure that anyone who is client-facing or transporting our youth or foster parents or any such folks under the jurisdiction of DCYF do have access to Narcan, because unfortunately it is often needed. I encourage your support.
Thank you, Representative Sen. Additional discussion. Representative Stokesbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We agree. We have unfortunately learned in some tragic circumstances how well Narcan can work, and I think this is a good idea by Representative Sen, and urge a yes vote on this amendment to the amendment.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the amendment, patent 182 by Representative Sen, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. There are additional amendments. Representative Macri.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move adoption of Amendment Walker 414.
It has been moved and seconded that the Amendment Walker 414 be adopted as standard, null, and void. All those wishing to adopt the Amendment Walker 414, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Now back to the striking amendment. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this striking amendment preserves the same criminal legal framework that passed out of the community
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I think the motion at this point is to adopt the striking amendment as amended.
Thank you, Madam Counsel. So the motion before us is adoption of the striking amendment H1850.2 as amended. All those...
And then discussion.
Discussion. Thank you. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this striking amendment preserves the same criminal legal framework that passed out of the Community Safety Committee with bipartisan support and really focuses on adjusting the behavioral health components of the legislation. The striking amendment really recognizes two truths. The first is that substance use disorder is a chronic, progressive brain disease. It's lifelong. It can be treated and put into remission, but it cannot be cured. And so as such, this really warrants a chronic disease management model, much like the way that we treat diabetes, hypertension, and cancer. The traditional substance use disorder treatment paradigm that was kind of the architecture on which the Senate version was built was really created about 50 years ago for the treatment of alcohol use disorder. It's an acute care model. So an individual goes to 5 days of withdrawal management or detox, 28 days of residential treatment, intensive outpatient treatment, and then you get a certificate and you graduate the person. Unfortunately, the rates of relapse are extraordinarily high, and that is because we have been treating a chronic disease with an acute care model. Individuals who have a primary opioid use disorder or stimulant use disorder, or more commonly, polysubstance use disorder, meaning they use both opioids like fentanyl and stimulants like methamphetamine, do particularly poorly in this care model. The second truth that the striker recognizes is that even if we wanted to use inappropriately that SUD that I just described for the Blake population, we actually don't have it. We have inadequate access to substance use disorder assessments. We have inadequate access to withdrawal management or detox facilities. We have woefully inadequate bed capacity in that system. And so even if we wanted to turn that on, our constituents would still be incredibly frustrated because it would take years to build out a system to catch that Blake population. And so what the striking amendment does is use what we do have, which is the Recovery Navigator program that was built out statewide in every single county under the Blake legislation passed 2 years ago. They have capacity in every county now to receive referrals, and it uses a chronic disease management model as opposed to an acute care model that's much more well-suited and clinically appropriate for this population. I encourage this committee support of the striker.
Thank you very much, Representative Davis. Additional discussion. Representative Stokesbury?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. To clarify, this is just the amendment, correct?
This is the
okay.
Striking amendment.
So I will say that we are opposed to the striking amendment. We think it is a step backwards from the version that previously passed the policy committee, but we'll save the rest of my remarks for final passage.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting striking amendment H1850.2, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
And Mr. Chair, I just would clarify that it is the adoption of 50.2 as amended.
Thank you. So let's try that again. We'll get the motion correct. All those wishing to adopt the amendment H1850.2 as amended, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Macri.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Engross Second Substitute House Senate Bill 5536 be reported out, do pass as amended by the Appropriations Committee.
It's been moved and seconded that Engross Second Substitute Senate Bill 5536 be reported out of Appropriations Committee as amended by the Appropriations Committee with a do pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very difficult subject matter, and it really occurs at kind of the intersection of the Venn diagram of behavioral health conditions and the criminal legal system. We have really tried to strike a balance here for individuals who are deeply interested in or invested in arresting individuals for possession of narcotics. That is fully retained in the bill before us. Law enforcement will be able to arrest on a first offense and have full discretion to do so. They will also have full discretion to divert. For those who are interested in prosecuting individuals for the possession of narcotics, that is fully retained in this bill. Prosecutors will have full discretion to prosecute. For individuals who are concerned about public drug use, this bill creates a new crime of public drug use, and that is preserved in this bill as well. But for those of us who are equally interested in providing meaningful evidence-based pathways to addiction recovery. That is in this bill as well, and makes significant investments in our addiction treatment ecosystem here in the state of Washington. While it is my personal belief that we should not be in the business of criminalizing individuals for a chronic progressive treatable brain disease, I understand that here in this House and in this chamber, it is our job to compromise and to come to agreement on complex areas of policy where there are a broad range of ideas. And I think there are actually more areas of agreement in this work than disagreement. Number one, there's universal agreement we need to pass a Blake bill this session. Number two, I think there's pretty broad agreement we need to do something to address public drug use. Number three, people want somebody to respond, and that's why we are kind of shifting to this focus on the Recovery Navigator program, because they can respond within 30 minutes to law enforcement and do have capacity to serve the community now. And the largest area of agreement among cops, among prosecutors, among the public, is that we want people to get better, that we actually do believe that people can and do recover, and we want to provide meaningful pathways for people to find recovery. I encourage the committee to vote to move this bill forward and allow us to continue working on it and continue this difficult, complex work to find a meaningful solution here. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, there are 19 aye, 12 nay, 0 excused or absent.
By your vote, Engross Second Substitute Senate Bill 5536 is reported out of the Appropriations Committee as amended by the Appropriations Committee with a due pass recommendation.
You just heard Washington State Representative Tim Ormsby, Chair of the House Appropriations Committee. You also heard Committee Vice Chair Representative Nicole Macri, Ranking Minority Member Representative Drew Stokesbury, Representative Lauren Davis, Representative Tana Sen, and Appropriations Committee Counsel Linda Morell. The Appropriations Committee approved House Bill 5536 on April 4th with a due pass recommendation as amended. The state of Washington has a deadline of July 1st of this year to replace its controlled substance possession laws. Failure to do so, I guess, means reversion to the laws pre-Blake, which the state Supreme Court deemed unconstitutional. They're basically between a rock and a hard place. So it's pretty likely that House Bill 5536 will become law soon. We'll keep you posted as things develop, so keep tuning in. Now, I'll be blunt. Anything that's just more business as usual is merely rearranging deck chairs on the drug policy Titanic. A law enforcement approach, like the Republicans' favor, is a guarantee of failure. More crime, more death. Forced treatment, the sort of kinder, gentler drug war that mainstream Democrats have pushed for years, well, that's similarly doomed to fail. It's clear that what we need are safe supply, safe spaces in which to consume, the decriminalization of people who use drugs, and the decolonization of drug policies. Nothing less. This is not your parents' drug policy reform. This is drug policy revolution.
No more drug war! No more drug war! No more!
Well, for this week, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member or become a volunteer. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh
saying
so long.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.